I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Look, if you go to a park, more people are going to watch a fight than a violinist.
Welcome back to the Front Three. We all saw a number of stunning performances last weekend, but none more so than that of Patrice Evra on Sky Sports. Following Tottenham's 6-1 hammering of Manchester United on Sunday, Evra produced an emotional outburst that Andy Tate himself would be proud of, threatening to quit his role as a Sky pundit several times, which was then, of course, viewed several million times on Twitter as the moment went viral within minutes. Which was all very entertaining, but the question was, where was the actual football analysis? So, inspired by my favourite podcast, The Second Captains, who mentioned this very such topic on their podcast this week, myself, Lawrence McKenna, and Chris Hennage thought we'd sit down and discuss Evra, the influence of fan media on broadcast Premier League coverage, and the current state of football punditry in the UK.
You know, I know you have to have some filter when you talk on TV, but he's a shamble.
I'm personally, I am f***ing livid. I want to go on a rant, but I'm trying to keep it respectable.
What's going on with my club? What's going on today? I'm really emotional right now.
They're a f***ing disgrace. They're a f***ing disgrace tonight. The entire team, the entire board.
That's why I'm going to ask to Sky. I really would like to end up my contract with Sky because it's my second game. I'm a positive person. And I never want to talk about United because when you tell the truth, it can hurt. And I'm passionate and I love my club.
Harry Maguire, what the f*** does he do? I bats him all the way. But listen, guy, you seriously got to get your f***ing head out of the clouds.
I don't promote the violence, but many people need, like, some good slap right now in this game.
Give it gigs it to the end of the season.
Lawrence, by now you must have seen Evra on Sky Sports. What did you make of his performance?
I think we've all seen it at this point, haven't we? Because it's kind of, I don't know, these things are almost made to go viral. It's partly why you believe he maybe got the Sky contract. I saw it. It was Patrice is obviously a very likable character. I don't know why. I guess I was watching it, and I was watching it more for the fear that if I had to talk about it, I wouldn't be able to talk about it than the actual want to watch it. So it was more like it felt like some sort of social phenomenon that had been created rather than, God, I'm really going to get some insight here. Although maybe the insight in the long run is, you know, even famous rich people cry.
They do. I did think, though, as I was watching it, you know, is this the place where I want to see people crying about their football team? There's plenty of places.
I didn't come here
to
for
see
this.
That. I didn't come here
I'm
for this.
I'm cancelling my Sky contract.
If I wanted that, I could look in the mirror, you know, sometimes when Spurs play particularly.
If you can find look in the mirror, I feel like you're
yeah. But it was, as you say, Lawrence, it's interesting. It was interesting to watch for the lack of insight. Incredibly entertaining, of course. But I couldn't help but question Chris whether this is what we should be seeing on Sky. And it kind of made me think, of course, of Roy Keane, who's another Sky pundit, perhaps the most famous for offering this sort of entertainment, this sort of take on football. Of course, famously last season, funnily enough, when Manchester United and Spurs last played, he was talking about offering out David De Gea and Harry Maguire, I think, at the time. The point being that, what did you make, Chris, or what do you make of what seems to be pundits leaning into a slightly more tribal, a slightly more partisan gear almost. There seems to be, especially when it comes to the main broadcasters, the mainstream broadcasters being Sky and BT here in the UK, this kind of shift into something that, you know, almost for me resembles something closer to fan TV and fan media.
Yeah, I think the fan TV comparison is a good one, actually, because I think when I grew up, there was always a thinly veiled nod to people's leanings and such, like Alan Hansen is obviously going to be Liverpool, okay, slanted, etc., etc. But now it feels as if it's almost quite unabashed and unashamed in the way that they link a pundit to the team that either they played for most prominently or that they care about the most. I think of Jamie Carragher's "Your Little Dancer" moment. There are all these sort of little moments where, again, it does feel as if you're listening to essentially a fan talk about this. And I think what you're seeing in a much wider context here is the Americanization of punditry, I think, in the UK. I think it's moving towards a point where they firmly want pundits now to have personalities and to have moments that are not necessarily intrinsically linked to analysis of the game, but them as people that they can sort of package up, share out, and get eyes onto. So that even if, let's just pick any two random teams, you're not a fan of Everton Norwich or Liverpool or Norwich, yeah, and you don't maybe care about why Liverpool's defence was so poor at the weekend, you will care about the fact that Jamie Carragher lost his temper at it, or that Patrice Evra sat there and looked like he was close to tears. It becomes about, look at the passion that we can give you. And I think the longer actually that we get away from supporters not being in the ground, the more this kind of thing is going to, I think, spread and proliferate, because they need to represent that passion somehow, and the most obvious way is through the pundits.
Yes, I guess I was going back through the history of where sports media in the UK has been and how people tend to map out. So, I mean, you know, in the past we had people, like Kristen was saying, sort of almost pretending to be a bit more formal, and there was a bit more, I guess, you know, the BBC would always try and keep their pundits impartial, which maybe seems like now some sort of unattainable journalistic ideal. We don't even know if it's even possible anymore, considering now about, you know, unconscious bias, all these kind of things. You know, I know it's often used in terms of, you know, racism or something like that, but, you know, I'll talk about it in terms of being partisan. I was mapping out the history, I guess, a little bit in my head. I think Kristen's right, you know, that the American pundits as we know them now, though, are not the same way as the pundits that we know Graham Souness or Patrice Evra to be. And let's put it this way, there's also a lot more of selection and a lot more competition in American television when it comes to punditry, at least, you know, compared to the UK. We will see Micah Richards trotted out every 10 seconds because apparently he's really good. And we'll see Patrice Evra trotted out. And it tends to be that people are flavor of the month because we can use them for a little while and then move on to the next person. And it is partly the cult of the personality, which is similar, I guess, to the politics side of things. And like Chris says, it also brings eyes, even if you're not really interested in the game. I also think it's in what I can only call the ITVization of television to some extent, where it's basically content which is good enough for them, so we might as well just put it out and they'll eat it up, kind of thing. And sadly, I guess that's also partly because of the way the news cycle works now. They know that they'll get a longer echo in the news cycle if they put out a Patrice Evra clip. And they also know that no one's going to watch for Patrice Evra's insight on, you know, what Salah did, but they will watch for Patrice Evra's, I guess, emotional outburst or whatever. And it's that, it's the Murdochization, I guess, is ultimately it as well. The networks are being forced to compete against each other, allegedly, for eyes. And that is apparently the ideal here, is that whatever's watched the most is therefore the best and the most advertisable platform or content.
It's definitely part of a broader trend, and obviously the attention economy as it is that you're describing. I think what's so interesting about it specifically with regards to football coverage, is that history you spoke of. It feels like in recent years there was this kind of push towards something that was more insight-led, more analysis-led. Not to go back to Andy Townsend's tactics truck from many years ago, but perhaps more recently, Monday Night Football, of course, that was something that was heralded. Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher's analysis on that show and the depth and the insight that they brought.
Don't forget that. I mean, before that, I mean, I know we hate them now, but Keys and Gray did do a little section every time on tactics, and it did feel insightful compared to what else we were getting.
I think, yeah, I would agree. I think there was, broadly speaking, much more of an emphasis on the what is happening as opposed to the why. And there seemed to be much more of a trend towards explaining why teams have won and how they've been broken down. And obviously the sort of tactical sophistication of the game is reflected in that, in broadcasting and explaining these new trends as the game grows more complicated. Obviously, therefore, explaining the game becomes more insightful. It just feels like I'm intrigued as to whether this recent trend, I don't think it is, there's definitely something in what you're saying, Chris, about trying to replicate the fan experience and the fan emotion, which is obviously so absent from football right now through these pundits who are more tribal. But there does seem to be a bit more of a gradual trend towards this, where the mainstream broadcasters, as I say, are focused on not just analysing the moments in the game, but also creating their own moments in their broadcast and their content around them.
Yeah, that's partly because I think from my perspective, that's twofold. First of all, I think it's because the marketization of football coverage, and I guess most people's idea that, again, like I said, you know, if it's got numbers, then it must therefore be good. And people judging content by what people seem to want to watch. First of all, that's a poorly used statistic. It's the same as when we used to say about Pep Guardiola's team. Oh, but they have more passes and possessions, so they deserve to win. It's like, well, they got more views and likes, so they deserve to get the views. It's like, that's a very reductionist way. And it also obviously helps people sell, you know, eyeballs, helps people sell the advertising to eyeballs. So I understand that reduction, because at the moment it's the way the market is. Don't rely on a free market. We all know that. The second side.
Where's Nico when you need him?
Where's Nico when you? Well, why do we need Nico when you got me? There's the other side of it, where it's that actually it's very difficult to train people to do that as well. It's very difficult to train people to be insightful. It's very difficult to get to that point. And most of the time, I think Sky have almost realizing where they sit in the market a little bit now, and there is a. I guess they're realizing what the ecosystem looks like a little more than they did before. And they're trying to insert themselves into the football now, because they realize we aren't actually as relevant as we thought we were. We were just telling people we were relevant. And actually, most people tuned in for two things on the weekend. Soccer AM, God forbid that would make a resurgence now. And then the actual game. And let's face it, at halftime, and this is an actual fact, There's a reason why nationally the power stations will up their potential outage of power at halftime of a football match and during the advertising break for Coronation Street, is because more people in the country go into the kitchen to flick their kettle on in that time. And that's not even a joke. That's an actual fact. So here's my real question, right? Why then, and it's more to the merit maybe of the delivery system rather than TV being good. It's then about, if we know that people go, the adverts are on, I'll walk away, why don't we shift that cash to people where we know people are watching?
I think if I could draw a direct comparison as well, I think what you're perhaps seeing as well is the fleshing out of these personalities as people. So when I talked about the Americanization, I look at, and I'm not an expert in the culture here, but I look at the relationship between LeBron James and Skip Bayless, and the notion that Bayless has, what's the word I'm looking for here?
An axe to grind.
Yeah, like he prejudges, a prejudice towards LeBron James. And then we look at Graeme Souness and Paul Pogba. There's a similar sort of narrative constructed with the two, where if Paul Pogba performs poorly, you're waiting for Graeme Souness to say something. You're seeing all of the memes on Twitter of that shaky image of Graeme Souness losing his temper and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the same is true with Skip Bayless and LeBron James, to the point where Bayless has become such a caricature of himself that some of his arguments are ludicrous. And that's what I think you see happen, albeit it hasn't happened as overtly with Souness, but we're going down that path. And I think that's what it is that we have almost, we've abandoned the idea that you should be fair in your evaluation of a situation. And that's where I think fan media comes into it, because I think the rise of that on the one hand comes a direct consequence to, I guess, supporters' frustration at the fact that when they watch something like a Sky or whatever, they don't feel as if they are represented, if their opinion and their viewpoint is seen. And the notion of a 606 or something like that didn't feel satisfying enough. It didn't feel like validation. I've said from very early on, for me, fan channels, whether it's Red Men or whatever, I think they sprouted up because it was 606, but you could see the person, and there was a sense of validation of, I can stand outside the ground, be recorded, it goes on the internet, and people see me giving my opinion, yeah, and I'm that, not just
they,
in the
they have the control as well. I think with 606 there is all that, always the element of the presenter knowing more, or the presenter, their opinion having more value, whereas in fan media, them controlling the medium, I think there is a value to that.
There is, I guess, what would, there is the other side with, I think we are still being quite naive in the conversation, I guess, in not taking the performative aspect of media into it as well. We're acting as if Graeme Souness in his own way is not being performative. We're acting as if Skip Bayless, I mean, you know, talking about American media is what reminded me of it. Most people consider to be Skip Bayless to be a performance. They consider Stephen A. Smith to be a performance. They know he's acting up in some way. And strangely, we're always seeking the authentic through media. We're always seeking like an authentic experience, I guess. And I think Chris is right in that whilst we can't see fans within the stadium, maybe Sky are asking people to dial it up a little bit. But maybe also there's an element with Patrice Evra where there's a reason people like Patrice, and it's partly because he feels like he represents something of a fan voice in there, like somewhere between, he was a man of the people, he was a bit of a people's champion at United, even though he wasn't a great left back towards the end of his time at United. It was like, well, he's still Patrice, he loves us, like we are, you know, we're the guys that he loves, we're Manchester United, we have a great relationship with our players. And I think maybe we're kind of forgetting that, like, all media is performative. Once you appear on television, you are doing a performance. And part of that was, we see that on Arsenal Fan TV. But the problem is, when then people don't perform in maybe the way that we expect them to, then we get a bit angry in some way. So that was perfectly played out on Arsenal Fan TV with Claude, where people were like, he's just real. He's just like one of the real guys. You know, he's just saying what he thinks. But then when he said what he thought, and he was raw, and it turned out to be racist, it was like, no, but don't say that bit. No, not that bit. And it's like, well, hold on a minute. Do you want this person to be real, and do you want to sponsor it? Or hold on a second, God forbid, the sponsors aren't actually watching the thing they're sponsoring here? Because, I mean, if ever we needed evidence of that, it's Gillette or Ford sponsoring Sky. It's like... The whole thing is, it's a circle jerk in terms of media in the first place. It's people selling media time, media value, you know this. But then the second side is, you know, I guess the performative aspect of that, and people needing to perform in order to keep people watching is a bit like dance, monkey, dance. But then when the monkey doesn't dance how you like, where you go, well, it's not my kind of dancing. It's like, well, yeah, well, the assumption is, weirdly, turn the TV on or turn the internet on and I'll see what I want. And I feel like we've basically been sold a lie in that. That's not even really true. We know that's not true. We know you've got to, you know, the interesting thing was, Boltwood, you had to go through the pain of watching, sorry, Adam, not Boltwood, that's a bit, But he had to go through the pain of watching Patrice Evra in order to go to the interesting conversation that you liked on Second Captains. But had you listened to Second Captains without the context of Patrice Evra, or they hadn't seen that, or maybe that hadn't been a thing, would they have had that conversation in the first place? So the news cycle in itself is a performative, I guess, sequence.
I think to me almost what the interesting thing about it is that I definitely feel like fan media, as we're all speaking about, has kind of crystallized that idea that, especially with regards to football media, you know, these viral rants will guarantee views. The more passionate you are, the more angry you are, the more extreme and more heightened your reactions, the more attention you can demand, and therefore the more revenue you can generate. And as someone who's a producer in this sort of digital football industry, I understand that ultimately your job is to get as many views as possible in order to generate as much money as possible, ultimately for the company you're working for, but to keep your job at the end of the day.
Yeah, but Adam, I absolutely
To boil it down to the absolute, the most basic level.
But let's say, I mean, it's funny because it kind of dawned on me last week. Like someone said, "Oh, did you see that content? It only got 13 views." And I was like, "Yeah." And then we were actually talking to someone who went, "Yeah, but the client were thrilled with it." And I was like, okay, well, how would the client thrill? Like, were 4 billionaires watching that and therefore they invested? It's like, actually, the value, people just seem to think views are the goal here online, and views do seem to be the goal now. But it's also the value then of those people watching and what you can do and the relationship you build with those people watching. So that is how, like Nipsey Hussle says, 1,000 people who love you, then 1 million who feel indifferent.
But that's what I think is so interesting. As you say, there are different values to content and broadcast, etc., and what people get out of them and what you qualify as success. And specifically with regards to rights holders and broadcasters, I think there is a responsibility to be producing better coverage than what we got on the weekend, as opposed to, as I said, opposed to seeing someone crying about their club, we should be seeing some sort of analysis. There did seem to be no sort of depth into exploring how and why Spurs won that game, beyond the visceral reaction that we got from Gary Neville and Patrice Evra over 90 minutes. Do you agree with that, Chris, that they should have a responsibility? Although it is tempting, and although it's understandable to almost not lower yourself, but kind of succumb to that idea of we need to get as many views as possible, as much attention, as many eyeballs as possible. That's us doing our jobs. There needs to be a higher standard for we are broadcasting this game. Fans aren't in stadium. There is a responsibility on our shoulders to produce something and present something that is a bit more elevated than what we can get readily elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've had those discussions myself in the past with content companies and what have you about the end goal and what are you trying to achieve? Because I think, look, if you go to a park, more people are going to watch a fight than a violinist. That doesn't mean that there's more artistic merit in the fight. You know, I think that's the problem, is we sometimes confuse the notion that people watching is an indicator of success. Now, that may be a case of me being too principled and too idealistic in terms of wanting actual insight and, you know, knowledge dispensed from these people that paid a lot of money to do that. I appreciate also it's very difficult to do it right in that moment because you're still kind of digesting the game as well, which is why I sometimes find Monday Night Football quite intriguing, because they've had an opportunity to breathe, to rewatch it several times. So I can see the case being made that actually in that snapshot moment, sometimes the emotional response is going to be the most crystallized and the most interpretable because it's right there and easy to access. I just worry that we start to go too far down that line where we lose all relevance of the tactical and the actual insight and understanding of the game that we do, you could argue, slip towards a more reality TV style moment where we put more emphasis on, I want to see, just to use the example, Patrice Evra look very upset. Like you're almost organizing the situation to create that rather than, oh, I think Patrice Evra could give us tremendous insight on his latter years at Man United post Sir Alex and those kind of situations.
And that's, you know, just it reminds me of when I was producing the kickoff. There's a time and a place for it. I don't want to see Rory give me tactical analysis of Chelsea, for example. I want to see Rory tell me about the magnificence of Frank Lampard, his pomp, or whatever it may be, you know. And you want to see him and Hugh Wizzy sort of going at it on the show. You want them to disagree. You want them to be that bit of friction, that bit of debate. And I think there is a place for it. And the kickoff, you know, to give an advert here, is a great place for that sort of content where you're getting the passion and the conversation and the debate that you want to see. It's just, I don't know about you think, Lawrence, but like specifically with regards to Sky, there is, as Kristen says, a bit of an understanding that, you know, in the moment, the emotional reaction is valid. It just feels like, as a broadcaster on Sky, with their resources, with everything at disposal, could they not be offering a little bit more there?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I guess it's, yeah, it's also the weird thing that they've only got two people in the room, and it's Patrice Evra and Graeme Souness. And it's a bit like, could you have put a third person in there who maybe would have offered some insight here? Is there anyone to bounce off? And then there's kind of, it wasn't Kelly Cates, was it? It was someone else in the middle.
It was Dave Jones.
It was Dave Jones.
Dave Jones looked like he was going to get chinned, basically, by Patrice Evra at one point because he was asking him questions.
Yeah, but he was also saying how much he wanted to cancel his contract. I'm sure Sky were thrilled at the idea of someone repeatedly saying on air, "I want to cancel my contract." Considering,
I'm sure now they're going to try and lock him up for the next five seasons. That's the thing.
It's strange. Every time I've asked Sky to cancel my contract, they put me through to that team of people.
It's impossible. It's literally impossible.
Yeah, the other aspect of that is then we watch Sky. Obviously, the main reason we pay for Sky is because they've got the games. Part of the system is broken because we don't really have any choice as to where we can watch the games. I'd love to have a bit more choice. There's a bit of an oligopoly on where you can watch football right now in the UK. I'd love to have a bit more choice. I'd love to know. Not that I think it's much. There's no perfect place. To flip it on you then, you haven't seen, and maybe it's insightful to see, that a footballer is human and a footballer has emotions, and someone who's considered to be such a club legend feels such emotion and yet so lost, so frustrated. He feels like the fans. This is a great way of seeing that. Are you basically saying this isn't where I want to see that or where I expect to see? Or it shouldn't be there.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, I think Patrice Evra could give you such insight, if not on a tactical level, then on a level of, okay, well, when you're 4-1 down at half time, here's how you respond. Here's what they'll be thinking in the dressing room. Here's why Luke Shaw had.
If you are 4-1 down at half time, how should you respond? Because I need to know for next time.
This is what I'd love Patrice Evra to tell me. You know,
I think if I could say one thing as well, it's not that emotion has to be devoid of those moments.
No.
I think it can be intertwined. And the truth is, I appreciate, if I can be candid for a second, there's probably been discussions had where someone like myself has been floated for a job and they've said, oh, he's a bit too dry, or he doesn't get, you know, as emotionally invested. Because that's just not who I am. I'm definitely someone on that spectrum who is closer to the colder side of things that likes to just focus on the facts and what I saw in front of me.
Right.
I've even during lockdown been doing some sort of Newcastle podcasts and things like that. And even then, to be honest, I don't get up a height just because that's just not who I am. When I'm watching it, in my own privacy, absolutely, I've said some terrible things about Steve Bruce and the football that he played. But I think when it comes to actually properly analysing that, for me personally, and I think that's what I would preface all of this is, it's through the lens of our own interpretation. I just don't think it needs to be so heavily rooted in that to the point where you lose all sense of what's actually going on here. Like Patrice's rant or whatever, that can kind of, it has a place, but I think where I lose a little bit of acceptance of its presence is when I see YouTube videos and it'll say in brackets, rant or goes crazy. It's, to me, it's the football equivalent of gone sexual in the hood. You know, those kind of prank channel videos where you know what this is trying to do. You know what it's trying to achieve.
But does the blame, as it were, for the popularity of this content, does it rest with the broadcaster, or does it rest with the audience? Is the broadcaster producing this sort of stuff because it gets the eyeballs, or is the audience consuming it because it's what they're being given? That's what I think is interesting.
It's a mixture of both, isn't it? Isn't there a bit of like, what's it, where 50-50, a little bit of both? Maybe there's a bit of
truth's in the middle, as always.
Yeah, but, well, no, yeah, partly, although it's also like a kind of, I go, a sync between the two where, you know, there's this imagined, as we all know, there's kind of this imagined audience when content goes out. For some strange reason, they always sort of go, imagine a man between 24 and 35, and he's sitting down watching it with his girlfriend or with his son or with his mates in the pub. And what does he want to see? And they're all in the pub, and he's going, oh, I want to see Patrice Evra crying. And it's like, oh, okay, great. Well,
ah, that's right. That,
right, okay. I mean, it's strange because I guess I'm... I feel an element of what can I say, empathy for Patrice Evra, because he's in a situation where he's clearly going through something else that's very difficult in his life, because for anyone to cry on national television, it is unusual. It's a very strange position to be in after a football match has happened and you're over the age of 30. For you to then cry, is it shows how much, first of all, he loved this game, but secondly,
it's an unwavering commitment to the brand, is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. but secondly, I've also had a lot of people, like Chris said, come to me and go, "We don't celebrate when there's a goal, so you don't feel how I feel. You don't do it how I do it." And there is a bit of dogma around. I guess everyone's almost attaining. There's like this. There's no. People have all got their own North Star as to what they want football content to be like, or they want, you know, should be like this. No, it should be more, it should be more emotional. No, it should be more analytical. No, it should be this. No, it should be that. And it didn't seem like Sky, didn't put it this way. I watched Sky and I think, wow, that's an expert thing they've done there. They've streamed that to a satellite, which has then come back to my television, and millions of people are watching it all at the same time. Fantastic, you can do that. But for some strange reason, you don't have any experts that can then tell me something that I actually want to see in that moment. You spent all this on the technology, but none on then what you're then getting it to me through. That always seems strange to me as well. Is I'm like, why would you not just spend more on what goes on the screen? Or I know it's an alien thought, but you know, give someone some notes. Sometimes they can be quite insightful.
Is there a place for all this different sorts of content? Are these different sorts of opinions and different sorts of insight and different sorts of takes on football? Because what worries me about this is this kind of the homogenization of, as you're saying, Loz, what the North Star is. Like, what we want to see is passion and rants, and we want to see it all being very extreme. I think there's obviously still places where there is nuance and there is depth, and you know, The Athletic seems to be very popular and very successful, and you know, them snapping up Tifo, and obviously something that very much plays into that wheelhouse and offers a bit more of a cerebral sort of take on football. Do you think there is a place for all this, Chris? And there is, you know, if you want to go and find your insight and your analysis, you go and find it. Why am I moaning about Patrice Evra crying on Sky Sports? I can go and read The Athletic and get what I want there. Or is there a genuine sort of valid concern about, you know, the mainstream broadcasters heading in this direction?
There absolutely is space for all of them. The concern I have is keeping the partitions between them, because I think what you run the risk of doing is that if one proves particularly successful, the rest will try to chase and ape its behaviors. And I think you saw that over in the States here when Facebook video was suddenly the next big thing and Fox did its infamous pivot to video, only to learn that the data and statistics behind that were false. And now they had a really terrible strategy going forward and they've now pivoted back to writing. Although I guess that's a U-turn, but a U-turn doesn't sound very nice. And so that's where I say that, you know, a Sky type production, if you want, has its place in the same way that fan channels do. I think what I would say with fan channels is for some of them, I would like to see them actually represent themselves now as media companies. I think too often I see them portray themselves as we're just a little mom and pop shop place. You know, we didn't know. We're sorry we made this mistake. I think they need to professionalize some of the elements behind the camera so that we get a more consistent product without kind of actually taking away what makes it so appealing to fans. I would be honest, things like Arsenal Fan TV don't appeal to me personally. I think some of that has been turned into a sort of a commodity or a product with people spinning off and doing their own things and becoming these personalities with catchphrases and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, crack on, it's you do what you want, but it just doesn't appeal to me personally. I think, like I say, it's important that the partitions remain, because even with somewhere like The Athletic, I like a lot of what The Athletic do, obviously, because I'm a nerd and I like to read these long stories. And truth be told, I spent a long time pitching to places saying, let's do a long story. And they'd say, no, the audience don't want it. And then The Athletic comes along and you do feel validated. But I also know that the people behind The Athletic talked about waiting out all of the local newspapers. And that scares me a little bit, because that's less about keeping the partitions and making sure that one doesn't gobble up the other. Because I have my own issues with some of the local press that back home where I used to work, but I still recognize the important job that they do, the role that they play, and why their content is different and why it works and why it's helpful to have it. And that's the thing, is that when you start to knock down those pillars, before you realize it, you've only got one holding up the roof. And that's my worry for sports media, is that it goes into that where you just have this one lane for all media to fit into, or two lanes. And that's not great. The more diversity we have in terms of the strategies and everything, the better it will be. I promise you of that.
That's the worrying thing, though. I don't know what you think, Lawrence, but in terms of somebody who works in football media, specifically video content, and kind of having been involved in the kind of the fan side of it as well a couple of years ago, it does all feel like it's moving in one sort of general direction. I think a couple of years ago, I think there might have been more of a space or more of a desire for there to be that diversity among publishers and among those who perhaps were producing content. But I think the temptation and the realities of the economics of it, if you don't move the trend, if you don't move in a direction that's going to bring you eyeballs and views and everything you need in order to generate the revenue in order to keep yourself going, then, you know, you're not going to be in this industry. You're not going to be producing your show. You're not going to be producing your content for very long. So I think, yeah, although there is kind of I think everyone has a kind of an idealistic or a kind of a desire to do what they want to do and do something that is a little bit, you know, more interesting, a bit elevated. I mean, even this podcast, to be honest, you know, like there was a couple of years ago when we stopped. But, you know, we do this podcast for fun. We're not making any money out of it. It's not something where, you know, it's going to make us millionaires in a year's time or anything like that.
Yeah.
And there came a point a couple of years ago when it was like, okay, do we pause this now? Do we try and do something which is going to make sure that there is revenue from it, which can kind of justify, in quote marks, keeping it going? You know, I think there's economic realities to producing this sort of content. And as you sort of say, Chris, the worrying thing is, I think everyone kind of moves in that one direction and the diversity and the pillars, as you said, disappears. And I think it does all become quite homogenized and all the same, essentially, in order to survive.
Yeah. So there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. But I think, obviously, there are trends. I also think there are, similar to if you're farming, some years you're going to have a good yield, some years you're not. And, you know, the part of the problem is there aren't many fields to leave fallow when you're making content. And actually, there's also a bit of, for want of a better term, churnalism for what happens online. So one person says something, then another person picks it up, then another person picks. And, you know, ultimately, you're probably hearing it third or fourth hand most of the time when you hear it online, or even fifth or sixth hand. Like, we also, sadly, have sort of encouraged people to think that free speech therefore means that everyone weirdly is as qualified to talk on a subject as other people, which is also not true, and that their opinion is just as valid as someone else. And weirdly, like, I don't know, there was a quote which I'm always sort of drawn back to when Robert Peston left the BBC, and I know Peston left for the money, so, you know, fuck that, but ultimately, what he did say was at the BBC, I felt like there was a real problem, because when someone said, you know, if someone says to you it's raining outside, your job as a journalist is not to say, well, that's one valid opinion. The opposite opinion might be, your job is to go outside and go, is it? Like, and so that's part of the problem is, we are, you know, obviously living in the post-fact era or whatever we want to talk about. What that also allows people to do is to make a quick buck, because it doesn't matter if anyone checked or all this sort of stuff. And I do worry a lot of, you know, I've said this time after time, there is a bit of a race to the bottom in some sense. There is a bit of a race to just say something first rather than say it accurately. And for some strange reason, we validate some of these people, or seem to give them validation, for the wrong things. Arsenal Fan TV were very good at certain things, but let's not pretend that they were good at tactical analysis in the way that it needed to be approached. What they were good at was filming an opinion, getting a very authentic person who had a very valid opinion, a very fast turnaround to get their voice out there and have a platform. And that's fine. But it also came with a lot of pitfalls that we also don't acknowledge, which are, it had an incredible impact on people's mental health. It had an incredible impact on the way that people spoke to each other. They would then exploit the fact that that person was emotional about it. Instead of saying emotionally vulnerable, they go rant. And these are all things that, for some strange reason, we, because they are seen as successful, they get, we term it as somehow a good thing. And like, actually, when you step back and analyze it, there were many good things. Like I say, the fast turnaround. For some strange reason, we seem to, again, think the numbers validate and therefore that's okay. And it's weird because I think a lot of people, given the chance to step away from, how many people, I don't know, here's the question, right? How many people, given the chance to step away from that, would go, yeah, actually, is there any way that I could stop myself from clicking on that? Because actually, quite a toxic part of my weekend, and actually I'm burning probably about 20 minutes that I could spend with my girlfriend or whatever. Or, you know, like, for some strange reason, we are encouraged to think that consumption within this is the goal, as opposed to somehow improvement of our own lifestyles. And like, I don't know, I guess we forget that these apps, and therefore partly Arsenal Fan TV and a lot of fan channels, are playing into the cycle that the app encourages, which is fast clicks, laughs, turnaround, stereotyping, shorthand, cultural movements, these kind of things. There, none of it is smart. None of it is, I mean, don't get me wrong, Robbie's a smart guy, and I'm sure there's another, but none of it is, you know, let's not pretend it's sophisticated in any way beyond what, you know, beyond the obvious.
That's what makes it so fascinating and so complicated, but also so depressing, though, is there's so many factors that do influence it. There's the cultural trends, there's the technology trends, you know, the way society is geared now. I think, you know, everyone doom scrolls on Twitter in the evening to try and consume some mental news.
Doom scrolling,
that's what you do every evening when you can't get off your phone just before you go to bed. I do that plenty. But I think there is the technology is geared towards that, the culture is geared towards that, society is geared towards that in quite a scary way. And I think it extends to all aspects of culture and society, and we're seeing it to an extent in football media. I just think that's a very interesting trend, and I'm fascinated to see if, you know, obviously the game is in a very unique situation right now, and I think there's many factors and there's many contexts which means we're seeing crazy results, we're seeing crazy games, we're seeing things we've never seen before. I think that influence and that impact is extending to the way football is presented and the way it's covered. But I'm very intrigued to see, you know, once we're, fingers crossed, on the other side of this pandemic and things hopefully start to return to normal and people are allowed back in stadiums and football's all back to normal, whatever normal will be, whether this sort of trend in broadcasting continues and we will still see Patrice Evra in 2 years' time crying on Sky Sports. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Let us know what you think at The Front Three. Is football media doomed? That might be the title of this podcast. It's catchy. It's clickbait, you see.
That is a really good one.
But Chris, thank you very much for joining us. Where can the good people find more of you?
At Kay Hennage or at The Front Three.
It's usually you tweeting you some big... You tweet some big bangers out, don't you?
Yeah,
it's,
I get a lot of credit with that.
I enjoy that. People are always like, who's tweeted? Is it Adam? Is it Lawrence? It's like, it's just Chris tweeting out the bangers, lads. That's all it is. It's always
all
Chris.
The funny ones are Lawrence or Adam.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I should have. That's what I should have said there.
All the anti-Steve Bruce ones. Oh, Chris, there we go.
Yeah, there we go, yeah. And actually, weirdly, that most of the time, that's Statman Dave. So,
and Lawrence, people can find you at The Front Three, tweeting hilarious tweets out every few days. Perfect. Or Lostcast. I mean, either or.
Yeah. You're welcome either way.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. We will see you next Wednesday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.